Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Judge Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. This week I'm joined by my colleague at FrontJudge.com, Mike Neff, as well as Ryan Preece, who's coming off a solid top 10 finish in the Daytona 500 this past Sunday. But before we get started, I wanted to remind you to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and you'll get it sent straight to your smartphone once it's published. Also, don't be afraid to leave those 5-star reviews, as it helps us out tremendously. Now let's throw it to my conversation with Ryan Preece. All right, Ryan, solid top 10 finish in the Daytona 500, finishing 8th overall, but kind of a wild day, so take us through your day as a whole.
We had a plan going into it, and that was to basically ride the first 2 stages, and, probably within the last 30 laps, 20 laps, kind of start racing, and that would make more sense to put your car at risk, so that's what we did. And we made it through the big wrecks, and that was more of a right place, right time, being in the right lane when they happened, and getting through them, and then obviously finishing 8th, and that was a good start for our season. So couldn't be more excited heading into Atlanta. It's a good start, and now we get to really hopefully show of all the work that's been put in at JCG for the past few months, getting ready for this new package. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and you mentioned the big crashes, and I wanted to talk about that because there were a few of them that were quite big, but you missed all of them for the most part. The first filling a hole that you barely squeaked by, the second going on the apron, the car kind of bottomed out. How did you do that?
It was just right place, right time. Actually, the first one I smashed into Chase, trying to check up, trying to slow up, just because when you're racing in the draft, you aren't even thinking about lifting. You're just trying to close every hole so no one else can fill it. And I actually smashed in and killed a lot of the ductwork and the belly pan and the splitter doing that. So we had some damage from there on out. And then the other two were just, you do all you can to miss them. And the holes were open when I needed them to be open, really, to be honest with you. So I was really lucky and fortunate enough, and I was pretty happy that was the first race I've ever raced at Daytona that I've finished. So that was good.
That's a good stat. Have you watched a replay of either of them? Because it was quite remarkable. I know you said it's kind of luck, but is it close your eyes and hope for the best, or what is it?
No, I don't think you'd make it through if you closed your eyes hope for the best. But it was a lot of it. It's just timing. I was lucky enough that when I was going into those situations of when they were wrecking, that I wasn't in the top lane, because I think we all see the top lane, typically the holes close right away. Mm. And then the bottom, you at least seem like you have a fighting chance for at least a couple, a second or two. And I'm happy that it all worked out. I couldn't tell you, I can't say like for that, hey, I looked at everything and I nailed it, I hit it all right. And really, it was just the right holes open when I needed them to, and I was able to get through it.
Now, we see this a lot in every plate race almost. There's a ton of carnage late in the race. I think the final 10 laps took over an hour to complete. There's like a 25-minute red flag, another red flag for 10 or so minutes. Is that just plate racing, or, and typically over Daytona the past couple years, it's kind of been wild, or is it just drivers trying to do too much late in the going?
I don't think there's ever so much as drivers doing too much. We're all trying to get the best finish we possibly can to get the best start, and also win the Daytona 500. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is just, that's when everybody starts pushing the issue, when
right.
Probably have a select few guys that are, their agenda is to get to the front, where everyone else is just kind of like, hey, we're going to keep our eyes open. We don't want to wreck or anything like that. And those last 10, 15 laps, everybody's agenda is to get to the front. Everybody's agenda is to win the race. So you're going to have stuff like that. And at the end of the day, it ended up being a good day for us. And I'm, really happy for everybody at Kroger and JPG. It was a successful day.
And I'm curious to get your take, because the Clash was single file for the most part. The duels were both single file for the most part. The Xfinity race was obviously single file pretty much the whole race. Were you surprised by the race we had, or because it's the Daytona 500 and the prestige of it so much on the line, did you expect 2 and 3 wide racing throughout?
Well, I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest with you. It was my first real, cup super speedway experience, so I didn't know what to expect. All I knew is that the warm weather was going to affect the handling of the race cars, where nighttime, even when we got into the nighttime during the 500, the car seemed to handle better than it had during the day. So, I mean, maybe that had something to do with it. I wouldn't say it was driver's holding back of any sorts, in the duels versus first to 500. We're all racing all the time. So it was, I think a lot of it had to do with the sun, the heat, and making the cars a little bit more of a handful.
That makes sense. Now, you mentioned the damage you got from hitting Chase earlier in the first track. On the white flag, though, you got all the way up to third, falling to eighth. Was that because of the damage, you think? And, you couldn't really make a move? Or what, why did you fall to eighth? How did you fall to eighth?
I think probably 20% of it was the damage, and the other 80% was lack of super speedway experience when it came to some of these things. I mean, I deal with the draft with the modified, but it's a different type of draft. In a modified, you use the guy in front of you to suck up to the car in front of you and slingshot by him, where in the cup car, you use the guy behind you to propel you forward. And it took all the way until I was able to really figure that out. So, I feel like if I went up in front of the 18 when he had the run and used that air to push me forward, that maybe it would be a different outcome. I think we would have probably had a better finish. But at the end of the day, I learned what not to do, and I learned what to try next time, and that's what it's really about. So I don't like making mistakes twice, and hopefully when we come back to Talladega, I don't make those mistakes.
Right, and obviously you wanted to win, because it is the Daytona 500. You'd win in your first, start as a full-time driver. But was there some pride in just finishing the race?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the race in me, when I saw the replay, just wanted to beat it into my head, saying, why did you do that? Why did you miss that? I was so focused on following Joey and trying to push him that I just lost sight of what I really needed to do. And but at the end of the day, like I said, I mean, I finished the day on a 500. I didn't bring the car home on a flatbed. It was what we needed to do to get a good start, and now we can, obviously, as soon as I got home, my eyes were set on Atlanta. So that's something that I'm really looking forward to right now, because of, I've been around the shop and I've seen, everything, all these gains that and all the stuff that they've been doing to advance JTG and their program. So it's exciting, and I'm really looking forward to getting there.
Now, one of the coolest things I saw on Twitter after the race, and we see a lot of this in stick and ball sports, is like you're cheering for a certain team, and obviously as a fan, I'm going with this. There's a Let's Go Ryan chant from a group of friends. And like I said, typically we don't see much of that in NASCAR. They're just kind of hooting and hollering. So what's that mean to you?
I spoke to my brother and my friends. That definitely happens at hockey games.
Yeah.
At races. So when I saw that on Twitter, it was really cool. I was pumped. I mean, that's something when you see the driver, you're like, okay, this is really cool. So hopefully we have some more Ryan Preece fans and JTG fans.
Got it. Now, I have a few more for you.
There's more people that are going to go to Kroger, too.
Yeah, got to get that sponsor plug in there.
That's right.
For you, how much, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, but how much momentum does a top 10 from the 500 give you moving forward, with this new aero package and whatnot?
It definitely gives it gives everybody in the shop something to really be proud of, for sure. But it's a new week. It's a totally different style of racing that's coming up this week. So, I feel very optimistic. I feel like everybody's very upbeat in the race shop, and all the hours that everybody puts in, all those long weeks that everybody's been doing leading up to the 500, it makes it worth it. So now, the guys that, if you need an extra hour out of somebody at the end of the day, hey guys, we need to go over and check this over one more time. I know you guys have already done it, you know, probably two or three times, but let's just make sure this is 100%. They aren't going to have an issue doing it. You know what I mean? And that's, right. That's what's exciting about it. So, you know, we're Chad and Jody do so much, and Brad and everybody involved over there at Kroger. It's hopefully this is going to be a year where everything really starts to pay off, and we can have some really good runs.
And I want to hit on that in a second. First, I want to talk a little bit more about the aero package. You know, it's brought into the sport hoping to bring the racing closer together. You were probably asked this on Daytona 500 Media Day, but how much do you see that helping JTG, especially on the intermediate tracks where maybe in the past they were a step behind?
Well, I think it just really hits the reset button. Just because every package needs its own certain thing to make the car or to get speed. And everybody pretty much, for the most part, I would say starts at square one. So it helped us all get to a certain point to where I felt like we were equal. And now it just comes down to developing and all of your research, you know, your wind tunnel, everything when it comes to the engines, the chassis, the wind tunnel. You're back at square one. So everybody's starting from the bottom and building, you know, building up and climbing those stairs. So I feel optimistic about it. And as far as the closer racing, it's going to be closer racing for, you know, the beginning of stages, but it's still going to be racing. You know, we're going to Atlanta this week. It's a high attrition, wear on tires is a big thing. So you aren't going to have thicker tires every single lap. So you're still going to have guys that are going to go hard early in the race, and they're going to fall. They're going to fall because their tires are wore out. So I'm hoping that show up with not only speed, but something that's going to last, and we can be there for the long run.
Yeah, and you mentioned at Daytona 500 Media Day that, you know, though JTG hasn't competed for wins in the past, doesn't mean that it's going to, you know, not going to happen this year. So you kind of hit why you feel that way, but do you have like a set standard of goals this year as a rookie?
It's hard to really set a standard just yet because we're going to Atlanta. I really don't know where we're going to shake out yet. But the thing I've always said is I like progression. I always want to see us progressing and getting better and better. And you know, if you can do that, you're gonna reach your goals and surpass them. So we'll see. My hope is that we unload with top 10, top 15 speed, and then we can build some longevity into the car and maybe pass a couple through that way. But we'll see. I feel very optimistic because of what I felt at Vegas, and we'll see.
Now, I want to end this with two modified questions. Obviously, you're a well-known and respected modified driver up here in the Northeast. How much do you plan on going back to your racing roots this year in the modifieds? I know you raced some in Daytona down in New Smyrna. How much do you think you'll be able to get back this year?
I plan on doing, probably 6 to 7 more races as long as the schedule allows, which I believe it does. So, racing, what's gotten me to where I am is by winning races and by racing a lot. And I've gotten the respect of a lot of my competitors by doing that. So, as far as what races I'm doing, the only ones I have circled is Bowman Gray, the opening race, the 200. And then there's a wheel modified total show, and also the New Hampshire weekend. Mm-hmm. And then there's a couple hit or miss open shows I think I can go to. It just really depends on how packed the schedule is and if it makes sense scheduling wise to do it. So we'll see. I mean, anywhere from 6 to 10 total for the year is kind of where I'm at.
Got it. Now, the final one, it's kind of a broad question, but there's always a talk, and you might not be able to answer it, and totally understandable if you can't, but there's always the talk of the state of NASCAR. But I want to know specifically about the modifieds, because they put on some incredible races. I think, back to the New Hampshire races, it seems like every year there's either a double or, three wide finish at the end. What do you feel like the state of the modifieds are?
I think racing in general is getting healthier. Obviously the economy, it hurt racing because it takes money to go racing. Back in 08 to probably all the way up until about 2016 for it to start recovering. And now I see more people getting modified. They see a lot more modified showing up and racing, and that's always exciting. So I think it's healthy. I think mm-hmm. it's only going to get healthier too, because you know, one thing I've been around is a chassis builder, Chassis Dynamics, and there's more and more people, he told me, that used to race that are coming back, and that's exciting to see, and hopefully that continues to grow, and we can continue to have more cup guys or Xfinity truck guys go to their quote unquote local short track, because I didn't just do touring series. I raced on a weekly short track every single week for multiple years. So, you know, one thing I'm going to continue doing is going to my local short track.
Awesome. Well, it looks like that bet on yourself a couple years ago paid off. Congrats on the top 10, Ryan, and good luck in Atlanta this weekend.
No problem. Thanks a lot, and hopefully we can have another solid run.
All right, now I welcome in my colleague at frontstretch.com, Mike Neff. Mike, after talking to Ryan Preece, you know, he was running third in the final lap, finished eighth. Really good performance for his real first race out in a full year. What were your thoughts?
It was pretty amazing. I thought he did a really good job for his first time at Daytona in the Cup Series. I got a chance to talk to him after the race, which you should hopefully see on our Patreon page in the next day or so. And I joked with him that Jimmy Johnson was often accused of having a golden horseshoe for a while. It certainly appeared like Preece had the golden horseshoe on Sunday night. He went through a couple incidents where, I mean, it was a parting of the sea, and he went right through the middle of it, barely came with a scratch on his car. And he attributed it to the fact that as he grew up, he always had to take care of his own cars, and he's hyper aware of the situation around him and can plan ahead. But at some point, getting through something like that, there's luck involved too. And he was really lucky on Sunday, but at the same time, he ran a smart race and was right there near it at the end. And just the way things kind of conspired against him cost him a top five, but still a top 10 for the first time out in that JTG car was a pretty good run.
Yeah, he mentioned there was a lot of luck involved. I asked him, you know, at that point, is it just kind of close your eyes and hope for the best? And he said, absolutely not. You still got to have some kind of talent, but it's all about luck, being in the right lane. Neff, this is his first year, obviously, with JTG. They are confident after talking to him at Daytona 500 Media Day last week. Obviously, got some new blood with Preece in there in the 47 replacing Allmendinger. This could be a breakout year, especially with the new aero package that we don't know, you know, how to look like on track.
Agreed. You don't know what's going to happen. This package could very well favor the lesser funded teams. I think that's one of the things that we've talked about repeatedly since this rule package was announced, that with it, you know, being down on horsepower, more drag, more grip, it becomes a thinking man's sport. And Preece is as thinking as any of them get. And it could really be one of those deals where you see the teams like JTG, like Front Row, coming up and really being in the mix and possibly winning some races, which for the sport as a whole, I think that's a good thing. Although I think you're going to get some complaints out of your higher-end teams that they're putting a heck of a lot of money in and not getting the reward. But I guess we'll find out how that all plays out as the season unfolds.
Agreed. Now, let's talk about the 500 a little bit. After the debacle we saw in the Xfinity Series and the clash we talked about last week on the podcast and also the duels on Thursday night, I didn't know what kind of race to really expect. And I know we talked about that on the preview podcast that we published Sunday morning. But I honestly think it was a pretty damn good Daytona 500.
It was. The first couple stages were, I mean, there was racing going on, but it was still kind of subdued. And it's funny to say it, considering the vast majority of the weeks we were down there, it was single file. But you only saw two wide racing for most of those first two stages. And that's for Daytona, that's a little on the subdued side. I looked back, and we talked about it a bit in the media center and on the podcast, that it was 2015, I believe, that the season, the clash and the duels were really, again, single file and really just not very exciting. And they dropped the green on the 500 that year, and it was three wide for the first 110 laps. And this weekend was similar. They dropped it. It was double file. It never went back to single file the entire time. There was one brief stint there near the end where it got pretty single file, but then we were lucky enough to tear up a whole bunch of cars, so that got it back to double file. So, yeah, I mean, I was pleased. If you're going to give it a rating, I'd probably give it a B- to a B. It had some excitement at the very end, but all in all, it wasn't overly captivating.
Yeah, I agree with you on stage one and two. Stage two was all about strategy. You had, and there was no cautions. You had the Fords put together, I think, on lap 12 of the stage, and then the Toyotas broke away from the field, and they pitted real late. Or there's a caution, then they pitted, so they kind of screwed themselves, to be honest. But Michael McDowell, or Matt DiBenedetto, rather, he dominated stage two, leading a race-high 49 laps. We had four cars lead over 40 lap or 30 laps, and three of them were Toyotas, one Chevrolet. What happened to the Fords?
The Fords wrecked each other. That's basically the way it came down to it, the way the whole thing played out. The Fords were, instead of working as a team, they, at least from the outside looking in, looked like everybody was kind of out for themselves, and they never really, when the time really came that they needed to work together, it seemed like they were all kind of on their own little islands. And it culminated there at the end with Michael McDowell getting a rash of crap from Ford people for not pushing Logano. But I, when you get right down to it, at that point, when you're coming down to the last seconds of the race, you got to go wherever you can go. And in all honesty, I thought the smart move for McDowell would have been to really get on Kyle Busch's bumper and stay there. And unfortunately for him, he just couldn't do it. And so that, you know, that kind of kept Kyle from winning the race, and it put McDowell back to a lesser finish than he should have got.
You know, even though they lost, I'm happy that they're upset with losing. Kyle Busch is always upset with losing. But Michael McDowell, a driver that, you know, doesn't get many opportunities to run in the top five or, you know, for the win. And to see him be fired up on social media to reporters after the race, it shows he has a passion, and he's still looking for that, you know, that first victory in the Cup Series. It was just so, I guess, odd because of how well they work together in practice throughout the week, and maybe not front row, but it was kind of interesting that on Friday in the owner's interview or owner's press conference, they did have Bob Jenkins up on the stage, who I know they're getting more support from Ford Performance this year, as they did last year. But he hasn't been on the stage before, so it'll be interesting to see how McDowell, David Reagan, Matt Tift, who those two didn't have good runs, were involved in the big one, do this year.
Yeah, Matt Tift had Eric Almirola sitting on top of his car. David Reagan had Eric Almirola sitting on top of his car. That was not a good way to finish 500. I was intrigued, and I appreciate that McDowell is another one of those guys that I think has the talent that if he could get in really good equipment, he would go on a run and have a shot at a championship because he's got that kind of talent. And to hear him post-race, before I got to the chance to interview him for our Patreon stuff, I was listening and talking to other people, and he said, you know, I've got a lot of top 10s and even top 5s at this place. It's time to win a race. And I'm with you. I liked that kind of edge to it and the fact that they're done being a second-tier team and they feel like that they've been at this long enough, they got the right people in the right places, and now they've got the right support that I think they feel truly like they should be up there mixing it up with Penske and Stuart Haas in the Ford camp and not be being treated like second-class citizens.
Agreed. Yeah. Now, I want to talk about Denny Hamlin because overall we're about 25 minutes into the podcast and have yet to speak about Denny Hamlin that much. Obviously got his second Daytona 500 in the last 4 years. As we mentioned, Toyota worked really well together. Hamlin, Kyle Busch, and Eric Jones sweep in the top three spots in the finishing order for Joe Gibbs Racing. Really a cool story, Neff, because of the passing of J.D. Gibbs last month that I just kind of like their destiny that it was meant to be.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. He talked about it in the post-race that he felt like somebody was riding with him a little bit. And, you know, I wanted any of the Gibbs teams winning would have been a good story, but it's especially good with it being Denny. And it goes back to how Denny was found. Mm-hmm. You know, Denny was actually talking on the radio today. I was listening to him about that meeting with JD and the fact that Reggie White was starting up a diversity racing program and wanted to buy some quality late models. And at the time, there weren't a whole lot of quality late models better than what Denny Hamlin was running. I believe he still got the one that he did the most dominant year with, but he had some cars there that won 20 and 30 races. And that, in the long run, was how it came about that Denny ended up on Joe Gibbs Racing. And not only that, but to look at the fact that he was running late models in October and in February went to Daytona and won the Clash in his very first race ever in a cup car. And I just said that whole kind of Cinderella story for him. And we've seen some other guys kind of get cut a break because they came in and people thought they moved up too early. But in 11 months, Denny Hamlin went from a late model driver to racing in the Cup Series. And he is not disappointed. I know last year was a disappointment to him, whether he'll admit it or not, not getting any wins. But they have started this year off right, and I would not be stunned to see them make a really strong run at a championship this year.
I agree with you. I talked to him after Homestead last year, talked to him in Martinsville, even though he finished second in October, and a close finish, you know, when Truex and Logano got side-by-side, wrecking at the finish. He was disappointed last year. There's no sugarcoating it. It's the first year, full year in NASCAR that he ever went without a win. But he can cross that off already in 2019 at Daytona. And I think you're right. I think this is just feels like he's going to have an outpouring year in wins and top fives. But who knows? Maybe we're wrong with the package. But I feel like it could suit a driver like him.
It could. I think anybody that is good at plate tracks is going to be good in the series this year. You know, tapered spacers are a different animal than a restrictor plate. Talked with Denny's crew chief a little bit about that during the champions breakfast Monday morning, and he was explaining that, yeah, the way the air, for lack of a better word, is charged as it comes through a tapered spacer, it is more primed for combustion than when it goes through just a straight restrictor plate. And so you're going to get a little bit more throttle response than you have on a plate track, and that, while momentum is going to still be a really big deal, there's still going to be a little more driver skill in it than on the plate side of things. But again, as I've said the other day, I think this is a cerebral sport, at least for this year, and we'll see what changes come down the line. But Denny is a thinking man, and sometimes it can bite him because he thinks a little too much. But I think this time around, I think it's going to be one of those deals that the package is going to suit him, and this may be that year that we finally see Denny break out and win that championship.
Yeah, you know, we had about a whole boatload of front stretch representatives at Daytona, but I believe you were the lone one to go to the champions breakfast, so I want to give you your time and ask you how that was, because I've never been to one.
Champions breakfast is really cool. For years when I went to Daytona, I never understood hanging around and getting up that early in the morning to go to breakfast. And then a couple of years ago when Kurt Busch won and Tony Gibson was there, he was one of my Tech Talk guys. And so I wanted to go and just kind of celebrate it with him because it had been so long coming. And so show up there, and it is just, it's probably the coolest day that I get to experience in covering this sport, because I don't get to go to Homestead for the whole championship. But for me, this is just, it's just a neat experience. You go up there, you grab some breakfast, you sit down at a table, and the crew members kind of intersperse with the media. And, you know, Denny Hamlin's sitting there with Jordan and his daughter, and they're at a table with Dustin. And another table over, you got Coach Joe sitting next to Clarby Lang. I got to sit with Gabe Hart, the new crew chief, and you just cut up and you have a good time. And you talk to one of the other guys who was at the table with me, said he came home at 5:30 in the morning and the guy handed him the newspaper that said Denny Hamlin had won the championship, and joking around about how they went to Steak and Shake after everybody got out of the track on Sunday night, because that's a tradition that started when Coach won his first 500 with Bobby Labonte. Dale Jarrett, I mean, excuse me. And they went to Steak and Shake that year. So this time they went, Coach picked up the bill. Denny had a grilled cheese sandwich and a Reese's peanut butter shake. And Gabe Hart and Denny had both been fighting some illness of late, so they actually called it a night after Steak and Shake. But the crew guys went out and tore it up until 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and then showed up at the breakfast. And again, just people telling stories. And last year was really cool because when Austin Dillon won, he went through his entire crew. And he named every guy on his crew, where he came from, how he got to be on his team, and some little anecdote about them away from the race shop. And the fact that you saw how close they were together and what a family they really were, it just brought a whole new introspection into what the team was all about. And so you get to do that. You see the Rolex that the winner gets. That's like $100,000 watch. I mean, it's amazing. The team owner, the crew chief, and the driver get a leather jacket. The crew chief gets a special trophy just for the crew chief. And then they unveil next year's logo for the 500. And after that, we go downstairs, and the whole team signs the car, and they unveil it to be sitting there just like it rolled out of Victory Lane. We'll be sitting in Daytona, USA for a whole year. And next year on, I can't remember if it's Tuesday or Wednesday, they bring a hauler down and they push it out of the museum into the hauler and they take it back to Mooresville. But it sits there looking just like it came off the track. The cool one, when Kurt Busch won, the thing came off the track. He had gone through the infield in his burnout and a big hunk of sod ended up on the hood. And they left that sod on the hood of the car the whole year. And people in the museum actually watered it for like 4 months before all the grass finally died. But they tried really hard to keep the grass alive in that hunk of sod on the car. And it just things like that are cool stories, you know. Coach and Coy Gibbs were there signing their name right next to the decal that was on a car with JD on it. And Denny's daughter got to sign the car, and they took a picture of that. It's a really different experience that you don't get when you're doing the monthly, weekly grind that is the NASCAR season, and it's one of my favorite days of the whole year.
Interesting. You definitely sold me on it, because I've talked to people in the past, didn't really understand still what it meant, but that's on one of the top of my bucket list, other than going to a few other tracks that I haven't been to yet. I can confirm that Hamlin and his team went to Steak and Shake, because myself and a few colleagues in the sport went to Steak and Shake. And I know this is pretty unethical, probably could cause a dilemma, but they did pick up the bill. Coach Gibbs is a man of his word in his press conference. And that was just a really cool experience overall. I don't know how to transition out of this, but Neff.
Yeah, and we also started the rumor mill because Kyle Larson showed up. So everybody was on board saying Kyle Larson's going to JGR.
Yeah, right. And then
that is not going to happen, just so you know.
Not going to happen. And also, he's at a Steak and Shake the day two days before they announced that McDonald's is going to be, you know, returning to his car for 6 races this year.
Yeah.
So, wild times in NASCAR. But I want to talk about Matt DiBenedetto, because he's had a wild career for much of it. But he led, you know, going into the 500, 140 career starts in the Cup Series, he'd only led 23 laps. On Sunday, he more than doubled that. He led 49 solely in that race alone. Levine Family Racing, that's the most laps they've ever led in a race. They've only led 60 as an organization before the 500. Overall, I know, and you kind of predicted it, Neff. You said he was your dark horse, and he lived up to it until he got wrecked by Paul Menard.
Yeah, I'm about 5 laps away from being a stinking genius the last 2 years in a row, between Almirola getting wrecked on the last lap and DiBenedetto getting wrecked, and as we were coming down to the finish again on this one. And that's the second year in a row that DiBenedetto has been sitting right about top 5 or so, if not better, with less than 10 laps to go in a 500, and got it taken away from him in an incident. But that's plate racing. But yeah, I think this year is going to be a different deal for DiBenedetto. He took a real chance last year and decided to just lay it out on the table and say, look, I'm gonna quit running for these other guys, and I'm an available free agent. And it worked out that Kane decided to bail out of the 95, and luckily for DiBenedetto, Toyota and the 95 group got together, and they're now a satellite of Joe Gibbs since Furniture Row shut down. And so there's there's going to be a lot of resources pumping towards that 95 right at the time that Domenico's getting ready to run it. And so it's lucky for him that it worked out that way. But at the same time, he's like Joe Flacco. He took a chance on his talents, and it may in the long run look like he is a real genius because he's – Matty D's always had some skills. He just has never been in a quality ride. And the fact that he is basically going to be in Gibbs-level equipment this year, there's no reason that he can't realistically think of winning 1 to 3 races and making a run at the championship.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he's definitely going to do a lot better than previous years and better than Levine Family Racing has done in previous years. He's definitely, in my opinion, one of the most underrated drivers in the garage. Kyle Larson's mentioned the same thing in interviews. Obviously, Larson would recognize talent. But this is only their third full year. Granted, they've been in the sport 9 years, and they are getting resources from, you know, Joe Gibbs Racing, but it's not the likes that Furniture Row was getting. It honestly might never be. Levine told me straight up that he doesn't have that type of money that Barney Visser did. So I think it's kind of a work in progress, but definitely a good first outing. I mean, you can't do much better other than win the race because he didn't win either stage, but I don't know. He did lead the most laps, which is a, you know, credit. Not only one person can say that every lap or every race. So definitely a good outing for him. I got to be honest, though. I was also surprised by pole sitter William Byron. He ended up leading 44 laps, which was the second most laps. Whoever would have said DiBenedetto and Byron were going to be the leader in laps led, take my money. I wouldn't have guessed that one. But he was racing hard with Jimmy.
I mean, I could have seen Byron doing it because he was the pole sitter.
Right.
But he had to figure out he's starting out there, and especially going in knowing the way the races had unfolded this week, that it wouldn't have been that surprising for him to lead a whole bunch right off the bat. But at the same time, we've seen Hendrick over the last few years really stink up the show when they got to the 500. So right. it was encouraging that they were still competitive throughout the race.
Right, but he led more laps in the middle of the race in stage three. And for a while, until he got shuffled out, I think he pitted or something happened. And he finished 21st. He got in a wreck. But he was a real, you know, had a legitimate shot of winning late in the race. Something that he didn't
He got taken out by Boyer when Boyer right, made yep. that move. And went off of McDowell's nose. He drilled Byron in the door, who then got drilled again by the double zero after he had already spun around and hit like 3 other cars. It was, he took a couple pretty brutal shots there. I was glad to see he was okay.
Although he did still finish 21st, which is saying from 7th place down, all got involved in at least one incident, and Eric Jones in 3rd also got involved in an incident. So this was a pretty banger of a Daytona 500 in terms of, you know, a lot of carnage.
Yeah, you had 3 cars that did not get wreck damage during the 500. It was Hamlin,
Busch,
Ross Chastain, and
Kyle Busch. And 2 of them finished in the top 2 spots. But then you had Jones, whose car was beat to hell, came home and finished 3rd. So, I mean, ultimately it doesn't matter because I think there's only 8 cars running in the lead draft at the end. Only 14 finished the race. Even Ryan Newman, who you can't see Twitter enough because you're blocked still, or banned. But they ran the last 10 laps of the race on a shredded right front tire. It's like, why don't you just come in and change it? I don't know the full story, the backstory on that, but they must have been out of tires or something because that thing was shredded to hell, and they had multiple times to change it because of the crashes. So. Yeah, wild Daytona 500. As we've seen really the past couple of years, it's kind of a trend over the, really since I started covering it in my first year was 2016, and that was the closest finish, but 2017, there's a lot of wrecks, 2018, a lot of wrecks, and obviously this year, a ton of wrecks.
Yep, and it's the biggest race of the year, and people are going to go for it, and when you're dealing with restrictor plates, everybody's bunched together, and the cars are moving around doing things, so you're stuck, and the end result is when incidents start, it's hard to get these cars slowed down because they run really small brakes on them, and your end result is, unless you get lucky and steer your way through them, or you get an incident like Elliott had in the Clash where he got hit by a bunch of cars, but the way it hit him, it didn't really do much damage to him. Sometimes you get lucky like that, but most of the time, you end up looking like Tyler Reddick did, and that car was used up.
Yeah, you didn't probably didn't see this either, but after the race, him and Bubba Wallace were bantering back and forth. over on the first incident of the race, I forget what lap, but Bubba got taken out, and Bubba still finished. He finished 38th because he had to call it quits on lap 169. But he got taken out by Tyler Reddick when someone spun in the middle of the field, when Kurt Busch spun. And Reddick just didn't slam on the brakes to try and avoid Bubba, just turned him and made Bubba's day all to hell. But he had some choice words on Twitter, so definitely check that out. Neff, what were you surprised by, though? I'd say the biggest surprise I had was Keselowski.
My biggest surprise.
Just because he didn't have a good speed weeks at all. I mean, the Clash, he had a penalty that we don't really see too much. They fueled the car while it was moving out of, and the right front was out of the, he was taking off, accelerating out of the pits. The Clash, he didn't do anything flashy. And then the Xfinity race had a roof hatch problem the whole race. Had to call it quits early. And then he got involved in like three crashes in the 500, and he was one of the favorites. So I would say he still did finish 12th.
I think I'm going to say Alex Bowman.
Oh.
Because I don't remember Alex Bowman being in a race. But you're right down to it. I mean, if you think back on it, I don't remember seeing him in a wreck, really. But I don't remember seeing him running up front. I know he was in the race because I saw his car on pit lane afterwards and I saw him walking by me. But in reality, I never really saw him as any part of the race. And that's surprising because in that stable, you see them running up front or crashing out. And he just was kind of non-existent. I mean, Jimmy and Chase were mixing it up a little bit and ended up getting taken out and all that. I will say this. I give credit to Chase Elliott fans. When he dropped out of the race and they were pushing his car backwards on pit lane, the Chase Elliott fans went bananas. I have never heard a louder cheer for a car being retired from a race in my life. But they were pushing him backwards down pit lane, and the fans went crazy. So I give credit to the Elliott fans. They are a dedicated bunch, and we will see how many years in a row he can win this most popular driver deal.
Yeah, I think Chase will probably win the most popular driver award for a long time to come. But something that was cool and something that's really intimate, because you don't have this in racing really. There was a Let's Go Ryan chant about Ryan Preece, and I was talking to him earlier on the podcast about it. Like I said, that's something you don't see in racing much because of the roar of the engines. You can't even hear the fans, really, when they're saying a specific driver's name. So that was something that was pretty cool from the 500. I didn't hear it personally, but I saw it on Twitter. He thought it was really cool. But, that is kind of cool that they roared for Chase's car being, essentially pushed to the garage.
Yeah. That's pretty, very crazy. Ryan Preece is a guy that could really change this sport. We're looking at a guy that for years built his own cars, came up the way you're supposed to, do that in air quotes, but the way that everybody has always wanted drivers to come up, paying their dues, doing their thing. He did the full Xfinity series in an underfunded car. Then he turned around and put all his eggs in one basket like Jeffrey Earnhardt did, and went out and Joe Gibbs stuff and really showed what he could do. And now that has all turned into this cup ride on a somewhat underfunded team, but at the same time a team that if they play their cards right with his kind of talent, could be in the mix for a racer this year. And I honestly think if you see Ryan Preece turn around and win some races, we may finally get back to where teams are going to go look for talent rather than money. And I hope we get to that. And the talk of the changing dynamics and changing business model of racing also afford team owners and teams a chance to go do that more now if the cost of racing can come down. I don't know how it's going to, but if it does come down, then yeah, I think Ryan Preece could be kind of that sea change driver that gets us back to bringing up drivers on talent.
For sure, and Preece is definitely a likable guy, always very personable, definitely a big favorite up here north, you know, in modified country in the Northeast. So yeah, I mean, we started this with Ryan Preece, ending the NASCAR talk kind of with Ryan Preece, and I expect good things also, you know, this year and going forward. Now, Neff, we didn't talk at all about Xfinity and Trucks. You can check that on the podcast we did before the Daytona 500. But we're going to Atlanta this week. Got another triple header. I'm interested in the racing this weekend, I got to be honest with you.
And we get the double header on Saturday, right?
Right. So I guess, who you got winning? Who you got winning the three races?
I'll start with Cup. We'll go backwards. And I know it's a cheap way to go. I'm taking Kevin Harvick. I mean, that team has just owned Atlanta for years. And I know we got a new package. It's going to be different, but it's still Atlanta. And he has been so dominant there that I just don't see what you throw at him that's going to cause it to be any different. So I'm going to go with Harvick winning the Cup side. On the Xfinity side, I am going to make a jump to Noah Gregson. He's in that Junior Motorsports ride now, and I don't know. I'm just feeling like it'll be him, although Christopher Bell's probably the smart choice. And then we look at trucks. What the heck? Let's go out on another limb and say Harrison Burton shocks the world into 18.
Interesting. Couple good interesting picks there.
Especially when his boss is running into 51.
Yeah. If you pick Kyle to win in the 51, I mean, you're going real out on a limb in the truck series.
Yeah.
But as far as Cup, I guess I'll work backwards too. I do think Harvick's going to win, but if I'm going to be different from you, which I guess I will be, I'll go Keselowski. He won there a couple years ago. Always runs fairly well at these types of tracks. Won at Vegas, and obviously a new package, so we can't really use anything from past years. Like I said, I'm really interested in the racing as a whole this weekend, but I'll take Keselowski, though I think Harvick's going to win. Xfinity, I'm going Christopher Bell. He's definitely the safe pick. Last year, only he and John Hunter were among the top five in Xfinity regulars at Atlanta. And then trucks, it's tough. I'm going to go Grant Enfinger. I picked him to win at Daytona, and he came really close, even with all the carnage and chaos that race was. I think he's due for a win. I know he won last year, and he won in 2016, too, at Talladega. So I'll go Enfinger. But Neff, you got any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Welcome to another season of NASCAR. We're going real racing now in Atlanta, and I'm cautiously optimistic to see what this new package brings us. I hope the fans will give it a chance and not just immediately condemn it or go bananas over it after one race this coming weekend.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about next week on the Front Stretch Podcast. But until then, we out.
Peace out.